ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कथामायं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम् वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुता परकमलम् श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवंश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगना रघुनाथं वितां धां सजीवां साद्वैतं सार्वधूतं भरिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगना ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणसिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते तप्त कञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरि वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. Let's look today at the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. On page number 573. Verses 8 through 12. 13, 8 through 12. You have a different copy?
No.
Okay. So there's a list of qualities and activities on this page, in this shloka that Krishna is speaking. He finishes the shloka by saying, all these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there is, whatever there may be, is ignorance. And here's the list. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. Purport. This process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of the 24 elements, And the process of knowledge, as described here, is the means to get out of it. Of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse. Mai chananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. But if one takes to devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop within him. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12, Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvar gunas tatra samasate sura. All the good qualities of knowledge develop in one who has attained the stage of devotional service. The principle of accepting a spiritual master, as mentioned in the 8th verse, is essential. Even for one who takes to devotional service, it is the most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond this is nonsense. As for the knowledge outlined here, the items may be analyzed as follows. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. The material conception of life makes us very eager to receive honor from others. But from the point of view of a man in perfect knowledge, who knows that he is not the body, anything, honor or dishonor, pertaining to this body is useless. One should not be hankering after this material deception. People are very anxious to be famous for their religion, and consequently sometimes it is found that without understanding the principles of religion, one enters into some group which is not actually following religious principles, and then wants to advertise himself as a religious mentor. As for actual advancement in spiritual science, one should have a test to see how far he is progressing. He can judge by these items. Hariharan Prabhu, could you please give me the Bhaktivinoda Thakur Sharanagati? It's the blue book up there. Regarding humility, this is the first thing on the list. Thank you. This, are you familiar with this book? This is called Sharanagati Gitavali by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And in this book, the Thakur has given us the process of surrender to the Lord. So part of that process is humility. Also, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Trinadapi sunichena toror iva suhishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. One should be as humble like a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, should be ready to offer all respects to others without expecting anything in return. This humility is the basic starting point for advancement in spiritual life. And in this Sharanagati, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, although he's a great liberated soul, gives us an inkling into extreme humility when he writes this song called Amara Jivana. And here's a glimpse into the mind and heart of an extremely surrendered and humble soul. My life is ever given to sin. In it, there is not a particle of good. I have caused others great anxiety and have troubled all souls. For the sake of my own enjoyment, I have never hesitated to perform sinful acts. Devoid of all compassion, I am concerned only with my selfish interests. Perpetually speaking lies, I become dejected upon seeing others happy, whereas the misery of others is a source of great delight for me. There are limitless material desires within the core of my heart. I am wrathful, fond of exhibiting arrogance, intoxicated by vanity, and bewildered by worldly affairs. I wear the cherished ornaments of envy and egotism. Ruined by laziness and sleep, I resist all pious deeds, yet I am very enthusiastic to perform wicked acts. For the sake of worldly fame and reputation, I engage in the practice of deceitfulness. I am victimized by my own greed, being always lustful. A vile, wicked man such as this, rejected by godly people, is a constant offender. Devoid of all good works, forever inclined toward evil, he is worn out and wasted by various miseries. Now in old age, deprived of all means of relief, this humbled and poor Bhaktivinod submits his tale of grief at the feet of the Supreme Lord. Any reaction to that? Manan Mohan, you said, was that you? You said, sounds like me. Sanjay said that too. So, any other reaction? Yes? Where's the mics? We have those going.
Knowing Bhaktivinod, he himself was a very successful person as well as given a lot into devotional service, that it sounds very surprising that he is writing this about himself. When I read about this, I wonder, was this at an age before he became serious about devotional service? What point in his life was this? Because this is very contradictory to what we hear about his actual life.
What a nice question. So, actually, this is the symptom of someone who is very serious about devotional service. You'll find the same in Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who writes the Chaitanya Charitamrita, who at a very advanced age went away from home, went to Vrindavan on the order of Lord Nityananda, and he sat down to write the Chaitanya Charitamrita. In it, he says, I am lower than a worm in stool. Anyone who says my name will become devoid of all their pious credits. And he actually feels like that. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the great advanced Thakur, actually, he was a liberated soul who appeared in this world, who played the part of an ordinary person. But obviously he was a very advanced Vaishnav. He wrote over 100 books of Vaishnav revealed scripture, and wrote all these songs, each one of them a window to the spiritual world. And this writing, this song, Amara Jivana, and the first part is all about this, in the process of surrender, of this extreme humility. And this is what Krishna is saying in this verse in the 13th chapter of the Gita. Amani Dvam means humility. This is the part and parcel emotion that comes with one who is advancing in devotional service, and also is a prerequisite to advance in devotional service. Actually, although it sounds like a lamentable position to be in, the great liberated souls, they relish taking this position of extreme humility, of dānya, and feeling like this. And this is an example, as a couple of devotees said when they heard it, that, oh, it reminds me of me. So when we hear this, we should also feel that, oh, yes, that's me. That's me too. In all the different aspects, that we see how far we have to go, and we feel, we lament our lowly condition. This Queen Kunti describes as a kinchana gochara, the state of mind in which we attract the Lord. We can think of it like a magnet. A magnet, there's a positive, and then it attracts a negative, right? If you have two positives, like two positive magnets, have you ever tried to put them together? You never tried that as a kid? They go like this, right? But if you hold the magnet near something else that's not charged, that's not has a positive charge, it immediately attracts attraction like that. So we could say in the abstract that the Lord is the supreme positive charge, to say the least. And those in material consciousness who think that they are little lords of the world and have some positive charge of their own as a little enjoyer. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, right? Bhoktaram jagatapasam. He's the enjoyer of everything. He's the supreme positive charge. Now, if I think I'm positive charge also, and I come towards the supreme positive charge, what will happen? I'll be repelled, probably for a long distance away. However, if I take the negative charge, this is trinadapi sunichena torapi torava suhishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. This feeling that I'm lowly, I have nothing. This is called a kinchan. Kinchan means something. I have some positive charge. And akinchana means negative charge, no charge at all. Then when I come close to the positive charge, what's happened? Scientists? Kids? Anybody? Immediately attraction, right? It'll attract. So this is the science of Krishna consciousness, why Krishna mentions humility. Queen Kunti says, all these positive charges I might take up. This means a state of consciousness where I think, because of my birth, I'm someone. Because of my beauty, I'm somebody. I have something. Because of my wealth, I have something positive. All positive, positive. Janma Aishwarya, I have some opulence. Shutashri Bir, I have some learning. Therefore, I have a standing. I'm positive charge. But Queen Kunti says, all these things simply repel the Lord. They're not attractive to him. And it leaves us in a state of intoxication that I'm something, I'm someone. But she says, one must be a kinchana gochara without any charge at all. And this is an example of the great Thakur who's expressing this. I have no qualification whatsoever. In that state of consciousness, one it becomes attractive to the Lord and can actually engage properly in the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Janmaishvari Shritashibir Edamanamadat Puman Naivar Yadidatum Vai Tvam Akinchana Gocharam. More? A little more? Okay. Nonviolence is generally taken to mean not killing or destroying the body. But actually, nonviolence means not to put others into distress. People in general are trapped by ignorance in the material concept of life, and they perpetually suffer material pains. So unless one elevates people to spiritual knowledge, one is practicing violence. May I read that again? Do I have permission? Any objections? Abstentions? Okay. Nonviolence is generally taken to mean not killing or destroying the body. But actually, nonviolence means not to put others into distress. People in general are trapped by ignorance in the material concept of life, and they perpetually suffer material pains. So unless one elevates people to spiritual knowledge, one is practicing violence. One should try his best to distribute real knowledge to the people in general so that they may become enlightened and leave this material entanglement. That is nonviolence. Any reaction? Narhari Dev Prabhu is eager. He has some reaction. Let's see what it is.
Put me on the spot. This aspect talks about the verse which we just spoke of humility also, which is, unless we feel we are we are like Thakur Bhaktin was mentioning, unless we feel that, we cannot practice nonviolence. So it's important to cultivate humility, and then naturally nonviolence becomes another ingredient. So like Prabhupada was mentioning, unless you know we engage in devotional service, all the other qualities, they don't manifest. So when one feels humble, it's natural. When we feel, you know, we are fallen, we are not as elevated as the other person, then we automatically, our mindset is, we'll never try to commit, behave in any way that'll hurt the other person or, you know, harm or offend. So it's important that as devotees we practice the principles of ahimsa. So that's very important as non-violence. So our one of the Vaishnav etiquette or the Vaishnav behavior is the ornament which actually decorates a devotee. So if we don't have proper sadachar, if we don't have proper conduct, then we basically commit violence. So that's very important that we practice, or if we don't know, then you know we take help and we learn the proper way in which we can conduct ourselves. So we practice non-violence. Even if we are not practicing devotees, even you know socially outside, we would see that if anyone you know behaves in a way which is violent, it's you know they may go on for some time, they may you know carry themselves forward, but they cannot survive for long. You know, practice of non-violence. This is basically what really helps a devotee take forward. Because if you don't practice, if you don't cultivate this non-violence, then you'll see, oh, you know, you can do whatever you want, and there's basically no one who can you know correct you or judge you, because then there's no law in the animal world. That's how it is. The dog who barks the loudest is the mightier one. And like in cultured society, in human society, you practice these qualities. Essential one is nonviolence. So it's essential that if anyone wants to take to the process of Krishna consciousness seriously, they must cultivate this.
Thank you. Thank you very much. There's a proactive aspect to this. You were going to say, Rakesh? Yeah. Speak into the mic, please.
So here the meaning of the non-violence is not only the killing animals, but here is more the non-violence means like we can hurt anyone by speaking or by our using tongue. That can hurt also. That is also non-violence. So we have to keep our tongue so that we don't have to hurt anyone.
Okay, well, that's one of the austerities of speech, isn't it? To not offend by your speech. But there's another aspect that Prabhupada's mentioning here of nonviolence, which goes over and above just not hurting somebody, but it's also not intervening when we understand that people are suffering. In other words, in the material world, because people are subjected to birth, death, old age, and disease due to what? Avidya, ignorance. It's a matter of ignorance. We're the same in quality as the Lord. We don't die, just as the Lord doesn't die, but we've fallen into ignorance. And to leave somebody in that condition, Prabhupada's saying, without helping them, that's also violence. That means we have to even be proactive. It's not just that you don't hurt somebody, but also if you don't help somebody come out of that condition where they're hurting themselves, this is also considered to be violence if you don't do that. So this is a very proactive understanding of this definition of nonviolence. So to distribute knowledge, Krishna consciousness, means nonviolence, because you're giving people an opportunity to come out of their suffering condition, come to real knowledge. Very unique understanding of nonviolence, don't you think? Yeah?
So does that imply everyone should preach?
He asked if that implies that if everyone should preach. Yes. It implies that if you have, for instance, if you have medicine during an epidemic and you don't distribute it, you can go to jail, actually, I think. If you hoard, you know, certain kinds of medicines or something that could help somebody during a time of famine, you keep food away from people, or you have medicine that could help people, I think you can be held criminally liable. Somebody get a Kurnath on the phone. You can find out. But this is logical, you know, in a society where people are in a painful situation and they're hurting or they're in peril. If I don't help them, then I'm held liable for that. So yes, means that if I have some knowledge in some way that I can help people, if I have a panacea, I should make sure that it's available to other people so that they can take advantage of it also. Otherwise, if I just leave them sitting there, then that's considered to be violence. So to distribute Krishna consciousness is very important. Manju?
Yeah, but when we are talking about, we just told that when we are thinking that we are having some knowledge that we can spread to people, does it not account to us thinking that we have something positive, like you said, you know, like us thinking that we have something, so we are better than them, so we have to. I'm not able to understand what attitude I should have when I go and tell somebody that come to the temple or do this to Krishna or read this. What should be my attitude when I'm doing this to someone else, like he said, when I'm preaching?
It's a nice question, and it's a subtle point, because there is a way in which we've seen over history, over time, when those who have access to a little bit of knowledge or spiritual advancement may then also become condescending towards others and think that without me, you're going to hell. Priests take that up sometimes. A tendency in the history of religion that the priest will take over the mantle, the lead of the church, and then everyone has to absolutely go through them, otherwise there's no access, so on and so forth. And also that different sects arise, and people think, well, this is the only way that someone can be saved. What should be our attitude when we go to preach? Well, first of all, if somebody's situated in knowledge, if you know that you have something valuable, you have to know how to administer it properly also. Just like a doctor who goes in to administer medicine or treatment to other people, there's a protocol and there's a bedside manner. There's a way of taking care of patients. Sometimes when people are, for instance, in a diabetic coma, they become delirious. And when the doctor goes to help them, they'll even try to hurt them. They'll try to hit them. They don't know where they are, who they are, and they'll misinterpret that somebody's coming to help them. They'll think that they're maybe trying to hurt them or they're an outsider or something like that. So in that case, the doctor has to understand the other person, and that along with ignorance, they're disoriented also. So when distributing knowledge, one should appropriately present it so that people can take it. Therefore, there's a division of helping people given in the Bhagavatam, Ishvare taradineshu balisheshu dusatsucha prema maitri kripopeksha yakaroti samadhyamaha. The madhyama adhikari who's given the task to distribute knowledge to others will discriminate carefully when distributing knowledge. And when he or she sees a person who is innocent and open, then that preacher will give as much mercy as possible. And when the preacher sees that there's somebody who's envious or closed-minded, then he or she will avoid the situation because it might just inflame the person and make them more angry or envious. So there's some discrimination in distributing also. In the case of the Panchatattva, it's mentioned by the author of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the Panchatattva, the associates of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, didn't consider who was a fit or unfit candidate. They didn't consider what was a good place or a bad place, but they indiscriminately distributed knowledge to everyone as much as possible. The poetic description is that there was a storehouse of love of Godhead that was left by Sri Krishna, but it was locked because he said, Sarva dharman parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvang sarva papebhyo mokshayishami masujaha. Surrender unto me and I will deliver you. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to give it out free. So he broke open the lock on that storehouse. He and his associates plundered the contents. And they went out and distributed it to everyone, not caring who was a fit or unfit candidate, giving it out indiscriminately. And in those cases, even we saw his closest associate, Lord Nityananda, when approaching Jagai Madai, even though to the general public and to others, they didn't seem like fit candidates, he insisted that they be delivered and gave them special mercy by giving it to them anyway. So there should be some consideration when in ordinary circumstances when we're going to distribute knowledge, because people don't have the exact same orientation that we have, and so we have to be sensitive to that and make sure that we give it to them in a way that they can understand and take it. And sometimes that even involves leaving them alone. That's why the Shastra says a madhyamadhikari should avoid people who are envious. If someone's extremely envious, then to push it on them, that could also be violence, because they might react in such a way to become more offensive. And that will degrade them. So using discrimination when we go to distribute. Also, it doesn't mean just because you understand that you have something valuable that you'll become conceited or condescending. It means really that you'll feel an obligation out of gratitude to give to other people. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani vanu pashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatuna vijugupsite yasmin sarvani bhutani atmai vadbud vijanataha tatrako mahakashoka ekat vamanu pashyata. One who sees all living entities as spiritual sparks in quality one with the Lord becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? One who sees everything in relationship to the Supreme Lord and sees the Supreme Lord within everything never hates anything or any being. So a person on the spiritual platform who's actually experiencing the weight of real knowledge, rather than feeling superior to others, he feels compassionate, feels generous. And when such a person distributes that kind of knowledge to others, people appreciate it. This was expressed by Srinivasacharya about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, that they were appreciated by the gentle and by the ruffians, as is the translation. In other words, those who are innocent and nice, they love the Goswamis, and even the scoundrels and others, they love them also. By the power of their generosity, by the power of their open heart, a Brahmin really means somebody whose heart is open as the sky. A Kripana, a miserly person, their heart is calcified. And that kind of feeling emanates from them. So if we cultivate Krishna consciousness, as was stated earlier, good qualities will exude good qualities. And the soul is very perceptive. When we meet other living entities, they can sense what our intention is practically. Even animals can do that. Have you ever heard that before? Dogs can sense fear. Animals can sense whether you're trying to help them or not. What to speak of human beings a very subtle sense if somebody's trying to take advantage of them or if they're really trying to help. And we find this. This is one of the reasons that preaching Krishna consciousness is so valuable for our advancement in Krishna consciousness, because when you give Krishna consciousness to others, you get immediate feedback from your environment about your state of consciousness. If, as Narhari Dev Prabhu pointed out, if you have if you're a violent person, which could mean that you want to, even if you're a preacher, that you want to prove yourself to be superior, for instance, right? This could be a case of violence, that you're not actually trying to help them, but you're just trying to prove your point that you're smarter than they are. You want to defeat them in an argument, something like that. Then you'll find out from your environment very quickly, from interacting with others, how they react to you. And if you want to continue in your career of preaching, so to speak, then you have to refine yourself. You actually have to become humble, and you actually have to care about people. And you also have to learn the art of how to present to people according to their culture, according to their time, and according to the time, and according to circumstances. And in that way, move in the world so that people can take what you're offering. And that may also involve, definitely involves being flexible. When Prabhupada came to America, he saw that men and women mix freely here. So he started a Brahmacharini ashram. It was never heard of before in India, Brahmacharini ashram. And he also, as a sannyasi, participated in getting his disciples married. People overseas in India were aghast. Well, what's he doing over there? He was giving kindness. He was kindly adjusting the situation so that everyone could take to it. Otherwise, if someone was too rigid, they might say, oh, well, they're not following the culture, let them go to hell. That could be considered violence, to not figure out how to adapt it so that somebody could take it. So when we go out, or even when we go in, I mean, we say preaching or communicating Krishna consciousness to others is not, it's an all-encompassing lifestyle. It's not just that we're here and then we go out to meet people at some destination, someplace. We should, first of all, preach to ourselves. Who do we have to preach to? The mind and our own self. One who preaches to oneself properly then may be qualified to speak to others. Otherwise, what is your potency to talk to other people? If you haven't, this is Rupa Goswami's statement, Vacho Vegam Manasakrodha Vegam Jihva Vegam Udrapasta Vegam Etan Vegam Yo Vishahetad Tira Saravamapi Mam Pritivim Nashishyat. That you have to control your own urges. And if you become a master of the senses, then everyone else in the world can become your disciple. If you're sense-controlled. Those who are sense-controlled, they're able to show kindness to others because they're not needy. They don't need something for themselves. If you go out to present Krishna consciousness to others and all you care about is that you want to make sure that they get some benefit. You don't care, I get some benefit from this. If there's a profit motive for myself, then there's a chance for some friction. There's a chance for some violence to take place, even on a subtle level. Therefore, we have to cultivate this humility, pridelessness, and we have to know what is the value of Krishna consciousness. And that we also have to be whole in ourselves. A brahmana means someone who's situated in the mode of goodness. Sattvam tad brahmadarshanam. That means if you're in goodness, if you're in sattvagun, it means you understand, I don't have to become something. I don't have to become someone. That's rajagun. Because I already am somebody. In other words, I already exist. Therefore, I don't have to reinvent myself to become something else. I already see that I'm Brahman. That's a Brahman. A Brahman means he's situated in Brahman. He sees I'm soul. And therefore, he's complete in himself. And when that devotee goes out to give to other people with a feeling of wholeness, he doesn't want to, he has no need to cheat other people. There's nothing to gain. He also has nothing to lose. And this others can sense. And so there is no shortcut. Only Krishna consciousness, full Krishna consciousness, will suffice. And therefore, it's a complete process. And when we go to preach, we're really, what we should think of is that we're going for our own purification. And in any case, however successful we are, Srila Prabhupada gives the mentality, an idea of the mentality we should adopt in the introduction to the Nectar Devotion. He says that Rupa Goswami has considered himself in writing the Nectar Devotion and all the other things that he presented to be a servant of the servant of the servant, and that he's an insignificant person. So Prabhupada said we should also feel like that as well, that we're instrumental to the Acharyas, and we're simply trying to do a small part, some small service to assist them. And one should never consider oneself a great preacher, but simply a helper. We're helping the others, helping the other great Acharyas. So if we take all those things into account, and we practice Krishna consciousness carefully ourselves, then when we go out to meet other people, they'll also feel our sincerity of heart. Sincerity is ironclad, really. It's ironclad. If you have that, then you'll be able to communicate something that may even transcend language. Definitely will transcend language. Prabhupada told the story of the man whose house is burning down and he's in a foreign land, but then he goes next door and somehow or other he communicates what he's trying to get across because his house is burning down. Out of necessity, he communicates it. And there's a sincerity of purpose that a preacher must have that is expressed here, that I need, the people need this, and there's an urgency to it. But if you have that, you have that urgency of feeling and a sincerity of purpose, then people will feel that and they'll be able to accept it. And in the cases where we get instant feedback from our environment, then we also become purified if we're ready to take that. In other words, if somebody reacts to the way we present it adversely, then we learn how to adapt so that we can present it in another way. Of course, sometimes that can be avoided also. Maybe the hazard of the doctor who goes into the battlefield to save other patients, you know, he may also, like I said before, maybe even attacked by a patient or something like that. And oftentimes, because we're living in a material world, the general conception is that I don't need God. And those who are preaching God consciousness oftentimes are berated or beaten or even killed. We happen to live in a country right now that is fairly open, and it's easy to go anywhere and preach Krishna consciousness. So we should take advantage of it as much as possible. I mean, we have freedom of speech practically. You can go and tell this to anyone anywhere and no one can stop you. You can go door to door. Maybe a few people, you know, managers might say, oh, please don't do this here. But no police car is going to drive up and say, you know, this is not allowed. I was in Vietnam last year and printing the Bhagavad Gita for the first time in Vietnamese. And we had to go to the publishers, and then the publishers have to take the book to the government, and the government has to, censors, read it every line to make sure there's nothing in there that might upset the status quo of the communist government. And then once they go through and edit the whole thing, they'll give it back to you, and they'll put their stamp on it, and then you can distribute it. If you just go and try to distribute door to door, in fact, we were warned, we were being watched the second we got into Vietnam. We were being followed. And the local devotees there's only two, told us that, you know, if we wanted to just run off and start distributing Krishna consciousness to others without the government stamp on our book, that we would end up in the police station and maybe go deeper into the system from there, unless we got out of the country pretty quickly. So there are different atmospheres in which to preach Krishna consciousness also. This is kind of a side point, but point is that we have a pretty good field in America, and what to speak of California. I mean, so we should take advantage of it. We should expand as much as possible to preach. It's good for us. Prabhupada said, if you try to explain Krishna consciousness to others, you will get superior strength and knowledge in Krishna consciousness. And that's absolutely true. He also mentions in the Krishna book that a person who receives knowledge but doesn't distribute it is like a cracked pot. In other words, it fills up, but it all runs out the bottom. But if you distribute it to others, then it will grow and it will solidify and your own realization will become strong. Is that all right? Okay. So now we're going to have Artik ceremony for the Lord. Over the last couple days, many, many devotees have been learning this Artik ceremony. We had a program on Friday night where at least no fewer than 28 devotees performed Artik at one time in one place, in one room. We had many Artik trays set up, fully equipped, and all the devotees went through one by one in shifts and learned how to perform the Artik ceremony, because we're having ongoing classes here at ISV for learning how to do deity worship, because this is one of the main processes of devotional service, is how to directly worship the deity. Today we had another class. The classes will be ongoing. They're listed, I think, on the board there. You can sign up for these classes. It's a great training experience. Well, is anybody there at the class on Friday? Who was there? How was the experience? What was your experience of the class? Try to embellish a little bit. No, go ahead, Marju. Just say it is.
It was very good, and we all, I think many of us did not know how to, I mean, we learned a lot of things that we did not know earlier, like how to treat the God and how to do all the arati and everything. And even the, I mean, like it gave us more consciousness, and in the house, even I had my, I didn't have idol, but my pictures were just strewn about, and then I went and cleaned it up a little bit after going back home, so.
So did you learn how to do Artik?
Yes, I did.
Oh, good. Nice. And you were going to say? You were at the program? Wait, speak in the microphone.
I've been trying to do Artik for some few years now, but I realized that I never... I mean, the order that I followed wasn't right, so... You know, I learned lots of things, small and intricate and details about arati. So I felt that, but I need a lot of practice. I need the notes too.
Yeah, practice is good. Abhyasa yoga yukte na. So you get a little preliminary knowledge and practice, practice.
So yeah. We're going to have the soft copy sometime soon, right, Prabhuji?
Oh yeah. Okay. You will get.
Waiting for it. Yeah.
Soft copy you can get, and ongoing classes are available too. Everyone's welcome to take these classes on deity worship and learn how to worship the deity. And it's an all-encompassing kind of a sadhana also. Besides preaching, this is also good for our own personal practice. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki, Gopremanande Hari Hari Bol.